Over the last few weeks, Josh and I have been telling stories. We've been trying to see the life of faith or Jesus himself or even God through the eyes of others. And to do that, we've gone first-person narrative. So today we come to the story of the rich man. And I want you to listen to him tell his story about his life as he experienced it. I was born into wealth, and I must say that in my time, my five brothers and I added to the family fortune. We knew how to make money. We learned it from our father, who got the knack from his father before him, who got the knack from his father before him, and on back into the distant history of our family. It really all goes back about five or six generations when we got our big break. Our family got in early on the rush to buy up Jerusalem property when our ancestors finally threw off the yoke of Syria. We were there with a handful of people. We were there first, and we bought everything we could get our hands on. Later, when the Romans came into the area, my family worked out some very solid arrangements with them. We've always known how to get along well with the powers that be. We've always known how to make a few shekels along the way while doing so. We've been around a long time, and we've always been wealthy. Now, naturally, I never knew any real hunger or want when I was growing up. Servants cared for us. They laid out my clothes every morning. They prepared our meals. They cleaned up the place. They left me free to concentrate on my social life and especially on business. So, I spent my day with other people like myself. I spent my days with people of means. I spent my days with people who had connections in high places. I spent my days with people who could make things happen. And together, we ran the world. Well, we ran Jerusalem and Judea, and that was enough. I had a great life. I had a great life. Everyone I ran with agreed folk like us were God's favorite among all of God's people. We were the apples of God's eyes. Did I mention that my family and I were very religious? Well, we were. Now, I'll admit, I didn't have much use for the Pharisees. I just didn't like them. They seemed small-minded to me. They were always after us about this or that or the other. I did not like the Pharisees, but the Sadducees and I got along well. Whenever I was actually in Jerusalem, I made a habit of worshiping at the temple. And do you know, the chief priest himself often met me in the outer courts. I would drop my sizable offering into the very special bin reserved for big offerings. And he and I'd talk a little bit. I really liked that guy. I mean, he knew the ways of the world. And he knew how to keep peace with the Romans, which, by the way, was good for business. I liked him a lot. You may not believe it, but I knew the first five books of the Bible almost by heart. The Sadducees, my friends called them the books of Moses. And I had memorized many of the Psalms because we used them in worship all the time, kind of like hymns sung unto God. Now, I'll tell you, I was acquainted with the prophets, but frankly, I found most of what those guys said irrelevant to real life. I mean, let's be honest. From Isaiah to Amos to Micah, I'm afraid the prophets just did not understand the realities of business and politics. Pie in the sky, guys. That's what they seemed to me with all that talk about God taking the side of the poor and the sick and the helpless and God demanding that his people fashion a society in which everyone had at least enough. The prophets They certainly didn't display the kind of respect my kind of folk deserve. You wouldn't believe some of the things they said about people like me. Thankfully, my father explained all this religion to me when I was very young. It went like this. According to my father, being rich meant we were favored by and approved by God. Everyone we knew believed this to be true, and I'll let you in on a little secret. Most of the poor folk did too. Riches and good health, for that matter, were rewards given by God to good people, people like us. So, if you were rich, that was proof you were in good with God. We, of course, like our friends the Sadducees, never worried about what might come after life, this thing that the Pharisees referred to as an afterlife. We didn't believe in any of that. You got what you got in this life, and when you died, we believed it was over. You lived, you died, it was done. Now, I had a good life. But I will admit there were some little aggravations along the way. For example, one day a street beggar named Lazarus took up station at the gate to my house. Each morning as I left to attend to great affairs, I had to pass by Lazarus. Now, frankly, he was the most disgusting street beggar I'd ever seen. For he wasn't only poor, but he was sick. Large boils covered his body, and he was too weak to walk, too weak even to crawl. I had no idea how he had found his way to my gate. He was so weak that one day I saw even the street dogs, vile vermin that they are, licking his sores. I got to tell you, the sight and the smell of Lazarus was enough to take away my appetite. And I remember thinking to myself, why, O Lord, am I afflicted with this man at my gate? Surely he has sinned mightily to deserve such fate. And to be honest, I wouldn't even touch him. I didn't want to get near him because I was afraid I might catch his sin in some way and be condemned in the eyes of God. Honestly, frankly, I was glad when he died. I was glad when he died and folk unknown came in the night and took away the body. And I thought to myself, there's one less sinner in the world. Thank God. Good riddance. A little while later, and much to my surprise, I died. You know, we never really see it coming. I died. And even more to my surprise, I woke up in what I suppose a Pharisee would call an afterlife. I can't say I liked it. It was hot, very hot. It was dark at the same time. I hurt all over. I was thirsty, thirsty in a way I had never experienced in all of my life. I couldn't move. I couldn't walk. I could just lay there. All I could do was look around, dart my eyes back and forth, try and see something. And so I began to do what I had done all my life. I looked around to see where the servants were. I looked around to see where the servants might be standing so I could call for one of them to come and tend to me. And that's when I saw, as though at a great distance, Abraham. The father of all our people. So I squinted, trying to see a little better, and what I saw shocked me, absolutely shocked me, because Lazarus was with Abraham. Lazarus, that beggar, was resting his head against the chest of Abraham, and Abraham was cradling him in his arms, almost like a child. Well, I thought, there's someone who can be of help to me. So I called out to Abraham, almost as one equal to another, Father Abraham, send Lazarus to me that he might serve me by dipping his finger in some cold water and using it to cool my tongue. I started to add and tell him to make it snappy, but I resisted. To my surprise, my great surprise, Abraham refused my entirely reasonable request. Abraham said something about Lazarus deserving a chance to rest after all the troubles of his life, and I do believe Abraham implied I now was getting what I deserved. At any rate, Abraham then told me Lazarus couldn't come to me if he wanted to because there was a chasm fixed between the two places. I think that was the moment. I think that was the first time I started to think maybe my entire family's welfare is at stake. What if we had been wrong? What if we had been wrong about what was important to God? What if we had been wrong about our place in God's world? What if we had been wrong about the place of the poor and the weak and the helpless in God's world? People like Lazarus. And I had to admit, from where I lay, it looked like we had been wrong. And that's when I began to worry about my five brothers, my family. How were they going to learn of this mistake in time to do something about it? I had a great idea, and I pitched it to Abraham. Father, I said, send Lazarus back from the dead to warn my brothers. Send Lazarus back from the dead to warn my brothers so that they may change their ways and not come into this place of torment. Now that, I thought to myself, would be a great task and a great honor for someone like Lazarus. And it might save my brothers too. To be honest, I actually felt rather satisfied with myself. I thought it was rather noble of me to put my brother's welfare ahead of my own. That's what comes with being a big brother, I guess. And I thought it was very gracious of me to offer Lazarus a task above his station. Only Abraham nixed the deal immediately. He nixed it, saying, they've got Moses and the prophets. They should listen to them. When I heard his reply, I despaired. I had known the teachings of Moses almost by heart. But my ingrained perspective, my ingrained way of looking at life and God and others had blinded me to all of the injunctions from God through Moses to treat other people just like I wanted to be treated, to build community, to do everything I could to ensure that everyone had at least enough. I had missed it. And I'll be honest, on those rare times when I went to the synagogue, I heard the prophets read aloud in worship, but I dismissed their call to practice kindness and to work toward all having enough as pipe dreams. All of it, the call to treat all others with grace and mercy, love and self-sacrifice, it had gone right over my head. I just never saw it. And I knew my brothers were just like me. They would need special help. They would need a miracle, as it were. They would need a miracle to shake them out of their view of God and life and others. They would need something to make them sit up and question and then revise all their assumptions. So I argued with Abraham. Father, I said, if someone comes back from the dead, they will change their minds and do much better. But old Abraham just shook his head. And he said, if they will not listen to Moses or to the prophets, neither will they be convinced even if someone comes back from the dead. That's my story. That's the end of the story. Since then, I've been lying here. I've been lying here unable to move, unable to help myself. I've been lying here regretting the way I used my life. I've been lying here regretting how I treated the poor and the helpless and the weak. But you know, Abraham's final words keep coming back to me. And I still find them hard to accept. Surely, 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 if someone came back from the dead, people would listen to him and believe him. Wouldn't they? Wouldn't you? Offered in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.